Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started.
Fitch came out this week and urged the Fed to reduce rates at a minimum by 75 basis points by the end of the year and urged them to start as early as May.
That is correct.
Is the Fed going to listen? What's going on, guys? Welcome into today's episode of Money Moves. We are back, as always, your host, Matty A., my co-host, Mr. Ryan Breedwell. We cover all things stocks, real estate investing, personal finance, and a little politics to keep things spicy. Mm. But as we all know, policy affects your bank account.
It does.
We love to dig in, keep you guys informed, have the conversations that need to be had in order to help you on your wealth-building journey. As always, if you enjoy the show, all we ask, leave a review on whatever podcasting platform you enjoy listening to this content on. Don't forget to check out all the great stuff we've got at MillionaireMindcast.com for you guys. Mr. Breedwell.
Howdy.
What'd it do, my brother?
Oh, nothing. Just another good day in the market. We had some interesting volume, it looks like, today, because there was a lot of data that came out. Lots of interesting stuff happening this week. We have a very, packed week. It looks light, but it's pretty packed.
Yeah. We'll dig into what is coming up this week. We'll dig into the narratives leading up into what is coming up this week. We've got reports on housing starts, permits, affordability, all kinds of data in the housing market, and whether or not there are any signs of cracking or if this baby is strong and the beast is going to continue riding up. And we also have some interesting updates regarding AI, crypto, and some good stuff, obviously, that you guys are seeing in the market right now and what investors can expect heading into the end of Q1 and rolling into Q2.
Dang, it's crazy. It's almost here.
So let's start by maybe some global news. We'll kick it off with the Bank of Japan decided to raise interest rates for the first time in a very long time.
Since 2008.
Very long time.
Yeah. They went negative.
Why did they do it? What does that mean for the global economy? Or is there any implication that we should be paying attention to at all?
I think it's great because they'll get some more volume on their sovereign debt. Like, people, foreign investors will have a bigger appetite for something that yields positive to them, even though they're at 0 to 0.1%. That's going to affect consumers in a slightly negative way, but you can think about it as being where we were from like 2009 to essentially through 2015 and then back again in 2018. Mm-hmm. So 0% cost on money is still 0% cost on money. There's just no more negative interest rates there. Implications for the world, I think, is it just changes how business can be done in Japan, but I think in a positive way, because just like when interest rates are really high, that's a negative thing. If they're negative, no pun intended, that's also a negative thing.
Yeah. So sounds like at least investors in the Japanese economy and market are happy about this.
I think so. When the data was announced, the futures market, at least our futures market, took a dip. And I was, because I thought that would be like a positive thing because that would spur investment there.
Yep.
And then I think towards the end of the day, that plus expectations being pretty levied tomorrow and some positive news from other areas, I think those all buoyed the market up. And that's why we had a positive day. New record highs again on the S&P.
Interesting statistic that I saw, 47% of parents still financially support their adult children. This is per study in CNBC. These parents are shelling out an average just shy of $1,500 a month. It's crazy. I was talking with a couple parents of the girls' friends, They have a 25-year-old son. And he decided to move across the country to go pursue work. I think it was in New York City. And then all of a sudden, he decided to move to a different state. And he asked them to, basically felt entitled to ask them that they should pay for his first month's security deposit, his last month's rent, and give him a bunch of money to reestablish himself out there. And it got me thinking when I saw this statistic, how many Gen Zs, millennials, and younger really feel entitled and or, at least to me, what it shows is how unequipped they are to go and navigate the financial world.
Yeah,
and to do it in a way that not only is going to help you sustain and build a foundation, but to actually grow wealth and create financial security and abundance out of it. And my opinion on that was, hey, if you need help, I got a room in my house for you. But if you're going to move across the country and go pursue dreams or goals or...
That's exactly how it was in my house.
Create
my
a plan.
My mom and dad, I think even to this day, my dad, probably not. My mom, for sure, would be like, come back home. If you need a place to come back home, but we're not giving you any money.
Yeah.
You can have the food at our house, but we're not going to give you money.
Yeah, which...
Because that just enables a bad behavior. You have to learn and grow back from... getting to square one, because going back home as an adult is being at square one.
And what I've seen as a common denominator for most people who have financial success is that they learned to struggle well. You've had financial struggles on your journey to becoming very wealthy, have you not?
I have. Yes. I've missed taxes. I've done all that stuff.
But that's how you learn, right?
Yeah.
The times that I lost money in an investment, or I made a poor financial decision, or I didn't budget properly, or I spend too much money, you learn from that mistake, not from having somebody give you the resources or bailing you out from it, but actually feeling the pain and going through the process of struggling to figure out how not to have that happen to you again. And so if you're a parent out there and you are enabling your child financially without any accountability, without any plan, without any real expectation of a commitment to growing through what it is that you might be helping them, all you're doing is, what did you say? Pop the titty out of the mouth.
I don't know. Did I say that?
But it's one of these things, right? These kids and the youth, right? They're attached and latched onto their parents like they are the never-ending money tree.
Yes, the United Bank of Mom and Dad.
Yeah, and I just think if you're a parent that's doing that for your kids, one, you're not doing yourself any favors, and two, you're not doing them any favors. Part of building financial literacy is actually putting in the work. I can't tell you how many times I told myself early on in my journey that I'm just going to pay somebody else to learn the numbers for me, to calculate the numbers for me, to manage my bank account for me. And we've talked about this before. No, if you want to be wealthy, that is one thing you cannot delegate mastering a skill in, which is financial literacy.
And I have a full-time accountant.
You do, right? But I think at the same time,
I know what's going in and out. Playing, yeah, I still see it. I don't like not look at my stuff, but I would be lying to say that I manage other people's money. And so when I manage my money, which I do, I make sure that I have somebody double check.
Yeah.
And the main thing I don't want to do is I just don't want to run a P&L and have them do my P&L for me.
That's what professionals do, right? What I'm saying for individuals,
I was giving myself some holy water there.
The ability to think.
Sorry, I just dropped my.
That your wise investor hat.
the ability to think
that you're going to get wealthy and rich by
living off your parents.
Living off your parents or the quick get rich over. Mm. There is a skill that has to be mastered if you want to be wealthy, and that is understanding numbers and your finances and how they all work together.
And the market has to demand that skill, and that's capitalism. And then if you're good at that skill and the market has high demand for it, you get a lot of money.
Well, and that's why this statistic makes a lot more sense to me. Nearly 60% of students with marketing degrees are working high school level jobs, making minimum wage 5 years after graduation.
I got shots fired twice.
You got a marketing degree?
I have a marketing degree.
But you are, again, an outlier. You're a contrarian to the statistics, but...
Damn, I'm catching some L's today, but when you catch two of them...
When you think about our higher education institutions now...
They're super expensive.
They're insanely expensive. Yeah. And they're not actually equipping people, unless you're going to be a doctor, unless you're going to be a dentist, unless you're going to be an engineer, an architect, a lawyer, something that truly requires credentials.
I think police officer still requires it because you got to do a criminal job. Maybe not.
Most of these individuals that are going and getting the liberal arts degrees, the marketing degrees, the sociology degrees. I'll throw a shot at me. I got my sociology degree.
What? Oh, yeah. Sociology.
And I was interviewing why I got into real estate investing and why I responded to that Craigslist ad in 2010 that said real estate mentor seeking real estate mentee was, I was like, this dude's actually making money, building wealth in an arena that actually has real upside to it. I was interviewing with my sociology degree for $35,000 a year type of jobs, yeah, right? Yeah. So again,
I would have sucked.
Winning the wealth game is not that hard. You just got to know the rules of the game. You got to understand the strategies and the vehicles that you can leverage in the game to win. And then you just have to execute on a simple plan and get repetition in those things and master those things over time. But most people are focused on the wrong things. And hence why we're seeing 47% of parents still taking financial authority over their kids, nearly 60% of students with marketing degrees working minimum wage jobs. Let's divert our attention and focus to the skills and the strategies that most people can learn and could excel and win with if they put in the time and energy to learn it.
Yeah, I think another way to even say that is I think maybe college campuses should only offer quantifiable or applicable things to study and go through. Because if you're going to pay that amount of money and then not get to turn around and use it, you should just defer somebody to a trade or maybe a two-year junior college program for a lower level associate's degree. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's why I think the model of becoming a millionaire is recalibrating a little bit right now. And I think people that are, we know a lot of the ways that you can become a millionaire, right? Real estate investing, stocks, businesses. And in the subcategory of that, that I think most people think they don't think of is the blue collar, hardworking, skilled trades type jobs that most of the older generations, that's all they knew. They were willing to get their hands dirty. They were willing to work hard. They grinded their ass off. Now these younger generations, we love our technology. We love punching in a couple things behind a computer screen and a result popping out very quickly. But if you're willing to work hard and you're skilled in trades, and I'm starting to see more of these schools come back, more of these credential programs come back. And I know a couple young dudes that have started, whether it's an HVAC business, a plumbing business, they're getting their electrical journeyman. These guys are making $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 a year because there's no competition right now.
Yeah. And it's
an undersupply.
Yeah. High demand. Yep. And that's because it's been easy times. Easy times. People do easy things. Hard times. People do hard things.
100%. So talk to us on this week's reports in the stock market. We've got FOMC rate decision this week.
Tomorrow or today. Excuse me.
So Fitch said that, and what is Fitch for those
They're
that aren't?
They're essentially the debt rating agency in the United States. They rate, when you say somebody's, I have a AAA rating, sometimes people refer to S&P global ratings. Fitch is really more experienced in rating debt, sovereign and international debt rating agency.
Okay. And Fitch came out this week and urged the Fed to reduce rates at a minimum by 75 basis points by the end of the year and urge them to start as early as May.
That is correct.
Is the Fed going to listen?
I doubt it. But I do think that is indicative of a very large and reputable third party, non-government third party, saying that rates need to be cut here pretty soon.
Saying you can't keep them this high for this long. Because I know a lot of people were saying, hey, inflation's starting to come back a little bit. It's running hot, or the economy's still way too strong. Maybe we should stay put for a while and see how things pan out. And maybe we'll start cutting towards the end of the year. Maybe we won't. I've heard some of those whispers. They came in, Fitch said, all right, let me pat you on the head, little publication. They have to start cutting rates, and they should be doing it.
75
like this.
Would be three cuts, probably. 325 basis point cuts. I think once they start, they're going to go pretty fast and hard, though.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to happen. Because they're going to, or maybe they cut and they extend and they cut and they extend, but they're going to need to cut. It's going to have to happen, because I know people say inflation is still really high, but it's really not that high if you take out shelter data. It's actually pretty low. And I think what the Fed really has to decide is, are they going to use a metric that's skewed, or are they going to go based on consumers saying, yo, dude, we can't afford loans. We can't afford to go buy cars. We can't afford to go buy homes. And we want to. And we want to sell our homes and move our assets. I think that's a hard knife's edge to walk. The Fed will have to do it. And I still have confidence that we can have a no landing or soft landing situation.
Now, with unemployment, we saw layoffs rose to the highest for any February since 2009.
That's kind of good.
Bankruptcies or debt defaults. More companies have defaulted on their debt in 2024 than in any start to the year since 2008 in the global financial crisis. So we're starting to see a little more distress in certain areas of the market that the Fed ultimately wants to see in order to validate the moves that they are expected to make as a result of some of the economic machines slowing, right?
Yeah, I think that the stock market can still go up and cuts can still be on the table, but it's just how high will the stock market go up when they cut, because it's going to inject a lot of liquidity back into the market. I think that people are still woefully underinvested, and that's why whenever there's these huge dips, we see the recovery so quickly, because I think people are taking it and using it as an opportunity to get back into the market. So dip buying, if you want to call it that, is still popular, but it's because people feel like they're underinvested. And the same thing, that momentum trade that's going on in Bitcoin, we see these highs and then crashing lows and then highs and then crashing lows. And the reason that the lows are getting caught, I think, is because people are trying to get back into those assets. The question is, and this is the point, when will that become old? And I don't know if it will ever, or if people are going to have a tolerance for it, but it's very interesting to see.
I just saw come across the wire, JP Morgan announces quarterly dividend of $1.15 a share versus $1.05 previously.
Ooh, that'll send that stock.
I was going to say, give me, because we just saw this come across. What are your, when you see something like that, what kind of ripple effects does that have on the particular stock and or the market, depending on what company they're reporting on?
People are going to pick it up in hopes that they continue their CAGR, or compound annual growth rate, on their dividend. And that's good for them. That's additional 10 cents per share passing through some of those additional profits they had last year, record year for JP Morgan, especially on their banking side, Chase. I think that that's a good sign that's a healthy sign for a bank when they can pass through those profits to their shareholders.
Beautiful. Growth has consistently outperformed value since the great financial crisis per Goldman Sachs. Is that still something that we would expect to see with the shift that's happened over the last few months in the market? Or is there going to be some additional shifts to where value may outperform growth? What are your thoughts on that statement, and what should investors take away from that when thinking about their allocation into growth versus value stocks?
I think when you're younger, you obviously should have more growth-focused assets because you're chasing annualized return and not so much yield. When you're older, though, you shift your assets towards value because they tend to lose less in down markets. They're not trying to necessarily have such a high annualized rate of return. They're trying to be more consistent, have a lower standard deviation. And their yield is much higher, which is real cash in your accounts, which normally gets reinvested in compounds. So to me, there's a time and a place for each. Younger investors should chase higher appreciating assets, growth. And I think older investors or more established investors that have balances that are larger can sit back and say, I don't have to take so much risk with my assets. I can go ahead and I can deal with a 4% yield and take a lower annualized rate of return because I'm being paid more to hold this asset versus hoping that the stock continues its growth rate.
Let's talk a little bit about crypto. Coin has had a pretty volatile past few weeks, but for many investors, a profitable past few weeks.
Sure.
What is going on with Bitcoin right now? And is there anything additional that you guys are paying attention to around this particular investment and or the crypto space as a whole?
Investment.
Yeah, I was going to see if you were going to say anything about that.
To me, the thing that's scary right now is still the ETF thing with the Bitcoin, because most of the movement in that is ETF inflows. And the outflows are just really aggressive on Bitcoin as well. Now, the thing that I don't think a lot of people realize is if we break through around the $58,000 mark on Bitcoin, that's going to put it where the majority of people's cost basis is that have bought in through ETFs. And we're going to see not only the liquidity features or how much people sell when they hold it in their crypto wallets or their cold storage, but we'll actually get to see institutions how fast people transact out of those assets via ETFs. And I think that could push the price down even further. Again, I think that what a lot of people overlook with the ETFs is it really took a lot of the value or usage that Bitcoin was trying to port. And it made it to where, okay, now people are just gambling on if the price is going to go up. So I think that's going to get old pretty quick. And I would expect there to be a pretty large pullback at some point, even though we keep hitting all-time highs.
Yeah, what is it? In the past month, it's up 22%, almost 23%. It sits at 63,600 right now, up 11,800-ish.
Down
from 10, a month ago.
Trending down $10,000 from its high. Its
yeah. Peak. It peak was what, 73,000 last Wednesday. And it is, so you feel like it's in that ETF honeymoon phase right now. It's frothy, mm-hmm. but it's going to retrace at some point here.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor. Our sponsor today is Uplift Desks, creators of the best office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. Visit upliftdesk.com/mindcast for 5% off your order. And if you sit all day while you work and you've never tried a desk that can transition between sitting and standing, this is a complete game changer for you. My standing desk is by Uplift Desk. It's what I use every day to record the show, to do my office work. And I gotta say, the transition from sitting all day to standing while I work at various times throughout the day has really made a noticeable difference. When I'm standing, I notice that my energy is up, I'm way more focused and productive, I'm an alert, and I even have a little standing treadmill under my desk now, which allows me to get some extra steps in while plugging away on calls and work. It keeps the blood flowing throughout the day, which we all know can reduce all types of inflammation, different health risks, repetitive strain, and I noticed that my posture has drastically improved since switching to Uplift Desk as well, because I'm not hunched over a computer all day. And while there's a lot of options out there, the reason I chose Uplift Desk is because of the quality. It doesn't wobble, it's completely stable, it's built to last, and you can tell based on the materials that they use, and they are customizable too. Uplift Desk lets you build your custom dream desk by choosing from over 100 desktop choices and hundreds of accessories, so you can build the perfect workspace for yourself using their fun to use desk configurator. Now, once you have your desk designed and ordered, they ship the same day. You get free shipping. They do free returns with free return shipping. And the best part is they have an industry leading 15-year warranty that covers the complete desk, which to me was a big deal. And it shows that they stand behind their product. Now, to get yours, go to upliftdesk.com/mindcast for 5% off your order. That's upliftdesk.com/mindcast to get 5% off your entire order.
Yeah, and we saw this like earlier in the year with the Yield Max ETFs that people were chasing high dividends on, huge pullback, especially the one that was tracking Tesla. Those are, people are chasing the euphoria. That's a momentum-based trade, I believe. And the momentum really is what is attractive about Bitcoin to larger or people with money, that larger investors or people with money that are looking for that. I just prefer to find it in areas that's more, how do I say, predictable. There's a little bit more data to say, okay, this is probably what's going to happen. The market closes. It's not open 24 hours. You can prepare for things like that. It's just a little more stable. And then again, I like dividends.
Yeah. AI, we've talked about in previous weeks, there potentially being an AI bubble. News today out of Saudi Arabia plans a $40 billion push into artificial intelligence and is looking to back tech startups tied to AI. AI will probably be smarter than any single human by next year. By 2029, AI is probably smarter than all humans combined. That was per Elon Musk. AI boom in data centers, warehousing, industrial has top tech companies spending more than major oil companies on their CapEx, which is their
capital
build out, their improvement plans for these spaces. So while many people are saying AI is a bubble, a lot of people said that about the internet. Yep. Now there was
electric cars.
I just don't see this.
Social media.
I don't see this boom or this bubble popping anytime soon in AI, but I could be overlooking some stuff here.
I think that there's going to be volatility until there's more stability around what AI is as far as more than what people know. But I'm having a hard time grasping that it's a bubble because I think people are comparing it to the dot-com bust, but it's just not comparable because all the companies that made it through the dot-com bust are here and they're the ones that are like involved in that. And they're just bigger and more capitalized and financially sound than they were back then.
Yeah.
So I don't buy that it's a bubble. I do think there's volatility. We saw AMD stock today drop by 10%, and that was on positive news from NVIDIA. So it's just, they're both going to go back and forth from each other. But when one gives positive news about their chips, I believe they increased the processing speed by quite a bit. AMD is going to have to respond to that with an improvement on their product in order to be, continue to be relevant. So that is the volatility I think that exists there. Is it a bubble? I'm not so sure. But I definitely think that there's opportunity there long term, which is why we saw, I believe, Bank of America raising their price target, their analysts around 985. I think some analysts have on the street have the stock price target north of 1,000. So that would be pretty incredible. But an 800%, I believe, year-to-date return or 80% or some metric that's still really high on that stock. I guess not 880. Yeah. Year-to-date on that stock through March is pretty incredible. And I think what people need to focus on is just, this is why you don't go 100% into a stock and you maybe have positions of it. So it's a piece of your pie. So your risk balance is okay. So then it's okay if there's a potential bubble in AI because you have 4% or 5% or 2% or whatever percent is right for you in that area. Mm-hmm. And that's why diversified investments long-term are always best.
Yep. I know that's something that you have helped me significantly with, getting a little more diversity outside of my real estate portfolio. I know you've done this for obviously many of our listeners. If you're a new listener, and you haven't taken advantage of the free financial x-ray that Ryan and his team do, if you have an investment portfolio and you haven't had somebody go through it with a fine-tooth comb, look at all the fees, look at all your allocations, look at what you're trying to accomplish, when you want to be there by, what your risk profiles are. That is something that Ryan and his team do for free for our Millionaire Mindcast listeners. If you want to take advantage of that and connect with Ryan and his team, you can text the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. Let's shift over a little bit to single family. We are not seeing any slowing of the single family housing market.
At least on buildings.
At least on buildings. I'll give you California numbers that came out today. California, February existing home sales increased 1.3% year over year. Prices up almost 10% year over year in California. That's pretty big. 9.7%. Housing starts increased to 1.52 million, the annual rate in February, which was very nice. Yeah, reporting there. We got single family starts up 35% year over year in February. Multifamily starts are down sharply. So something to pay attention to there. But with that being said, asking rents climbed at 2% in February, which was the biggest gain in a year, with the Northeast and Midwest as the biggest gainers and asking rents rising roughly 5% from a year earlier. That's per Redfin. So the demand for rental housing is obviously high.
Yeah.
There's still an undersupply of those housing units. And we're seeing builders' confidence increase,
mm-hmm.
builders' permits increase, housing starts increase. So the sprint to continue to supply inventory to the market is obviously there. That urgency is there because affordability is still at an all-time low. For the first time, housing affordability is the worst on record per Bloomberg. It would take some combo of up to a 28% decline in home prices.
Damn.
More than a 4% reduction in 30-year mortgage rates, or up to a 60% growth in median household income to bring home affordability back to its 25-year average.
I like the last one.
And this was a study done by Black Knight Data, one of the best data firms, at least in the housing economics and market in the country. And when you think about that though, right? It would take a combo of either slashing home prices by almost a third. It would require us to drop rates by 4%.
Come on.
Or up to a 60% increase in household income.
Can I get an amen on 4 1% cuts?
I'll take any of those.
And a 60% rise in median income for everybody.
I hate that so many people are struggling to find housing and shelter at an affordable rate.
Well, especially in our state.
Yeah, you look at a lot of the blue states, it's terrible. And yet we're given all kinds of subsidies and advantages and concessions to non-paying tax citizens right now, which is mind-blowing. While hard-working citizens that are struggling, that are in poverty, that are doing all the right things, that are paying their taxes, are not getting the advantages of. So pretty wild to see. But that being said, we still have builders, investors, organizations that are trying to put out as much affordable housing. We're seeing more and more groups get creative and how they're working with cities and states and counties to create incentive and development programs that allow them to actually have the models make financial sense to build these things and provide them at the rates that, you know, people can afford them at. But it's still such a big gap and a major bridge that, you know, still needs to get figured out.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
Yeah, and I heard there's a pending potential federal credit for people that would buy a new home. It would be about $400 a month or $9,600 a year, I think is what that would pencil out to.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Yeah, and debt is mounting in an interesting way, maybe not as...
up to $9,600 a year.
Yeah, up to as stressful as and the pressure that some might think, but with an estimated $30 trillion in equity in the housing market within the U.S., borrowers have been turning increasingly to home equity lines of credit and second lien mortgages.
Mm.
This is Morning Wire or Housing Wire, more borrowers are tapping their homes for cash 2 years after the Fed began raising interest rates. And generally,
that's interesting.
That's what we see happen. People hang on as long as they can, and then they start tapping into their final lifelines. And what did we say? The biggest insulation to the economy right now is the amount of equity that people have in their homes.
Yes, there's.
You're not going to see short sales.
No.
You're not going to see, like, the demand is there, so you're not going to, it's, the values aren't flipping upside down. So the only, the last lifeline that a lot of people have, or maybe the easiest lifeline to tap into that people have, is their home equity.
Yeah, so, selling and then just renting until something.
So I think that's something to pay attention to, right? Because if now you start, your leverage starts getting higher and higher, and if for some reason equity shrunk in some capacity or something happened where that lifeline is no longer there, then that's when people are start making some tougher, harder decisions. But I still think we got plenty of insulation between now and then.
I do as well. And if interest rates come down, that would be even more of an argument.
Agreed. So we'll wrap it up on this one. The average, and this is more around the perspective and the timeline that goes into building wealth and becoming a millionaire. Statistically, the average savings tenure of Fidelity account millionaire savers, how many years do you think they save and invest in order to become a millionaire?
17 years?
26 years.
Wow, there you go. Call me, not Fidelity.
And the average age of a retirement account millionaire is 59 years old.
At retirement.
Right? So when you think about that, to me, let's reverse engineer this for a quick second. Fidelity and their model was invest until you're when?
65.
Right? So they've got this model. They've got their suggested investments that you should be making over that timeline.
Yep.
And therefore, you're going to unlock what? Financial security and wealth, right?
Yep.
And so when you think about it, this shows that the average person who followed that plan actually did it faster than what the timeline was, 65 to 59, and they became a millionaire by just following a simple plan.
Yeah, and with more current data, it's definitely even more possible to do it faster.
Way faster.
That. Yeah, because you can now buy individual stocks at a time when that data, what am I trying to say, batch was over. People were not owning individual stocks like they do today. The rates of return that you can get from individual stocks are much higher than what you'll get from a mutual fund or just owning ETFs. Having a blend or having mostly individual stocks in your account is a really good way to get higher long-term rates of return, as long as you pick good investments. And that's what you hire an advisory group or team or an advisor like myself to do. We pick those investments. And Matt will tell you, in both of our portfolios, we have stuff that are multiple 100% rates of return.
We're looking good.
And you're not going to get that in a mutual fund over a couple year period. It's just not going to happen.
We're a little aggressive though on ours.
We're aggressive, but in a good way. Most everything we have is large cap growth.
Yep.
Which is good.
What I'm getting at is, if you're somebody that wants a six pack by a certain time,
by Coors Light,
there's a model and a plan for that. If you're somebody that wants to buy a house in this current market, no matter the challenges or obstacles that might stand in your way,
yep,
there's a plan and a model for that. If you want to become a millionaire instead of by 65, by 45, and you're 30, there's a model and a plan
for
that.
We got lots of people on those plans.
All I'm saying is, if you don't have a clear plan for what you want, and you got all these moving targets of, I want to be financially wealthy and successful and this and that, chasing many rabbits leads to none. You have to figure out, at a bare minimum, a baseline foundational plan that you know you can execute on no matter what. Can you layer on and make things sexier and more exciting over time? Sure, but you have to have a foundational plan, default every month, every year. I know I'm going to accomplish and execute on this plan.
Yep.
And then trust in whatever that process and timeline looks like, and don't stray from it.
Agreed.
Then you can get sexy and start layering in stuff and maybe chase this a little bit riskier, go try that. But a bare minimum, that plan's getting executed on. And it blows my mind how many people don't take the time to just stop and first look in the mirror and look at your portfolio and look at your finances, because oftentimes that'll hurt your ego. I know. Yep. It did the first time I did it. And then I said, okay, I don't care about looking good or wanting to be right. I care about winning this game. So what is the plan? What's the strategy? What plays do I got to run in order to put those kind of points up on the board over that timeline?
Yep, and you're doing it.
And anybody can do that. So if you haven't taken advantage of the financial X-ray, you can connect with Ryan and his team. If you haven't connected with your financial advisor and talked about this and leaned into creating a plan, then do that. Call Ryan. But I know that anybody, and I've seen so many people, and I know you have too, that are not the smartest. They don't have the sexiest business models. A lot of them don't even have their own businesses. They just have a certain amount of income that they work with, and they have a little bit of money left over, and they strategically allocate that, and they keep it simple but consistent. Those choices made over an extended period of time compound into something great, and anybody can unlock wealth if they decide they want to.
Yep. Some of my best, wealthiest clients are just my best savers.
There you go. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. As each and every week, we will cover stocks, personal finance, real estate to help you on your wealth building journey. If you enjoy the show, all we ask, share it out. Share a review on any podcasting platform you enjoy listening to this content on. Don't forget to check out millionairemindcast.com for all the great stuff we got in the store, the resources, link, show notes, all that good stuff for you guys at millionairemindcast.com. With that being said, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. We'll see you guys in next week's episode.
Cheers, y'all.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Money Moves. Be sure to tune in next week for more news and updates. And if you got some value from today's show, all we ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're going to get entered into win a $100 gift card. Also, don't forget to take advantage of Ryan's free financial X-ray on your investment portfolio. And to do so, all you have to do is text the word X-ray to 844-447-1555. What we have found by offering this out is most people have no idea what they're being charged from a fee perspective, or really in most cases, overcharged, and whether or not their current investment and financial plan is actually aligned with what they're trying to accomplish. And this is something that Ryan and his amazing team do for all of our listeners for free. So be sure to take them up on that. Again, that's X-ray, one word, 844-447-1555. Also, if you're an accredited investor and you're not on my deals list, be sure to text the word deals to 844-447-1555 to be notified of the private investment offerings my team and I put out. And last, don't forget to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family at millionairemindcast.com. Whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, calculators, the Rich Life Planner for those looking to take their goal setting and productivity to the next level, we've got all kinds of great and valuable tools available at millionairemindcast.com. With that being said, that's all for this week. Until next week's episode, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.